Since becoming a cop 6 years prior, I'd grown to dread the 31st day of October. I could no longer believe the holiday was simply a night of innocent fun. I'd been witness to desecrated graves and smashed pumpkins, violent bar brawls, and deadly DUIs. The night gave liberty to all sorts of spooks and ghouls, not only encouraging them to come out and play, but practically daring them not to. I was also a parent, though, and slowly learning that Halloween was a night I needed to tolerate, if not someday even embrace. My daughter, Grace, was nearly a year old, and already she was captivated by the glowing pumpkins and toddler-sized spiderwebs that adorned front porches and yards all over town. Luckily, because Grace was so young, my fiancé, Brody Sutherland, and I still had full control over what she wore. He wanted to dress her as a witch, while I was leaning toward a cute bunny. After a heated discussion in the back aisle of a costume shop on Colfax in Denver, where the three of us had gone for a quick weekend getaway in late September, we split the difference and paid $40 for a zombie llama costume. It was as ridiculous as it sounded. By the time we got her ears on, Grace looked like a rabid camel. But I'm nothing if not stubborn, and by God, we were going to get our money's worth. Brody threw on an old monkey suit, and I slipped a pair of cat ears over my dark hair and called it good. We'd been out an hour. It was well past dusk, and we were nearly done trick-or-treating. The sky had turned a violent deep purple, a shade of eggplant that seemed both ominous and watchful. The full moon was still low, gradually beginning its climb up past the clouds. We were lucky. Though the forecast had predicted an early morning snowfall, none had come, and the night was merely cold instead of both cold and snowy. Cedar Valley, like most mountain towns in Colorado, was both blessed and cursed with a population that was widely spread out. Even our nearest neighbors in the canyon were a good quarter mile away. And so, every Halloween, the town city council sponsored a spooks night out. Up and down Main Street, merchants and shop clerks decorated their storefronts and competed to see who could give out the most coveted treats. This year, word on the street was that old man Brewer, at the bookshop, had a seemingly endless supply of full-size candy bars. We reached the end of Main Street, where the businesses faded into stately residential homes and low-slung bungalows. Grace was sleepy, her eyes nearly shut. It was quieter here, with the bulk of the trick-or-treaters still to the north. Brody adjusted his monkey suit and moved Grace higher on his shoulder.
"What do you say? It's been a long evening."
It had, but we had one more stop to make. I promised Caleb we would come by. He's dying to see Grace in costume. Anyway, it's just up here. The small, tidy, single-story red brick bungalow was set back from the street on a quarter-acre lot. A gleaming white Mercedes sedan, parked along the sidewalk, got an appreciative whistle from Brody. Together we read the placard mounted on the black wrought-iron fence. Montgomery and Sons, Estate Planning and Legal Services. Though I and everyone in town knew there were no sons to be found inside. There was only retired Judge Caleb Montgomery, and a part-time paralegal who favored heavy gray cardigans, even in the heat of summer, and smelled incongruously of coconuts and tropical sunscreen. We pushed open the gate, wincing as the rusty bolts screeched, and stepped onto a narrow path that led from the gate to the front door. Caleb, or most likely his wife, Edith, had lined the path with carved pumpkins. They glowed, lit from within by tea lights. The door opened slowly as we reached the front porch. Caleb Montgomery greeted us with a smile and a bowl of hard butterscotch candies.
Come in,"
he called softly, noting the nearly sleeping Grace in Brody's arms.
"A rabid camel? How original. Wherever did you find a costume like that?"